Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raider fake the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Raider to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, baseball had a winning weekend. Also, several A-State football players getting free agent deals after the NFL draft. Good stuff to talk about there. Track and field with another good weekend. The women's golf team going to the postseason for the first time ever. We'll talk about that, but we're going to start with the Sun Belt Conference champion men's golf team. To talk about it with us, a very key member of that Sun Belt champion men's golf team from Germany. It's Thomas Schmidt. How you doing, Thomas?
Good. How are you, sir?
All right.
He's from where?
Well, yeah, I was going to say the name of his hometown, but when I was practicing earlier, Thomas just shut me down, said, you're not even close. So how do you pronounce the name of your hometown?
So I'm from Gelsenkirchen. It's in Germany in the western corner, close to the Netherlands. It's like 30 minutes off the border. Nothing special to it. Those who are into soccer probably know Schalke. It's a big major soccer team in Germany, and that's pretty much where I'm from. That's the closest I could kind of guide you through Germany to find my place.
So were you a soccer fan growing up? How'd you get into the golf?
Yeah, so I've been a soccer fan, and soccer was actually the first sport I ever played. But then it came a little tough for me when I had to go 3 times a week to practice after elementary school, which included like a 2-hour practice, and I was 7 or 6, and I couldn't do it. So then my mom, as a birthday present, took me onto the golf course, asking me if I want a caddy for her, just pushing her trolley around and walking the course with her. And then afterwards, she asked me if I want to try it out myself. Then I had my first lesson, and I got into it. The first 2 years were pretty much like once a week, just hitting some balls on the range, but it kind of progressed over time to being getting competitive with it and hunting my dad in terms of handicap, getting better than him, better than my mom. When I accomplished that, I pretty much got into my age class tournaments where I competed against guys my age, and that got me into competitive international golf in the end.
So you answered one thing, that both your parents played.
Yes, both my parents are playing for her.
Both good?
They're both playing decent. Yeah, my dad would hit me right now. But yeah, my dad's playing a solid 9 handicap. My mom's playing 15 back in the day. Now, not anymore, but yeah, both of them playing, and actually my sister's playing as well. So,
she's a golfer. Younger, older?
My sister is younger than me by 2 years, but she's also into the game a little bit, probably just because of all my friends that are playing golf, but she's enjoying it nearly just as much as I am.
When did you realize you were pretty good at it? You had a chance to go far with golf.
Yeah, so I noticed that I could do something important or like become better when I transferred clubs to my last golf club and found my coach there, who got me into the game even more. He explained the game to me to a point where I play golf right now how he explained it to me. He taught me more about all the technical things and the thought processes of golf on the course than the actual game itself, like how I swing or anything. And that really helped me throughout my whole career since till up today.
So how many golf courses were around?
Actually, in the area that I'm living in Germany, we have like, I would say 60 golf courses inside an hour drive.
Wow.
So you actually have a lot of golf courses, sadly just a handful of decent ones.
Yeah, it's a little bit different story from Luka Naglich when he was in here last year. Luka's telling us about the golf courses in Slovenia. There's like 7 in the whole country.
Yeah. In Germany, we have 370 golf courses in total. And I mean, Germany is just the size of Texas, pretty much. So we have a lot of golf courses, but our memberships are so much cheaper than here. We don't have the money to maintain the course in a way that would have a standard, honestly. So it's a really tough thing. And we only have an, I would say, 7 to 8 month season where we are actually able to play golf outside.
So you realize that, hey, you might be pretty good at this. How'd you get over here? When did you first hear about Arkansas State?
That's a funny story. I was searching for college because my coach said that I have to go to college to become better and progress and be able to turn professional and be successful. But then my coach changed his mind and was like, hey, you got to turn professional right away. But I already searched for colleges, and I was with an agency that commits players to colleges, golf players, and they connected me to Coach Hagen. But when my coach changed his mind, I just didn't reply to anyone, including Coach Hagen. But then 2 years later, when I progressed even a little more, my mentor, he played tour himself, told me that I have to go to college to make a real move. And that's when I asked a friend of mine to commit me to a college, get me in touch with somebody. That guy, he had two options for me. The other college didn't want me because I took a gap year and it was kind of hard with the transcripts from my German university and all that. But the other college was Arkansas State. He connected me to Coach Hagen again, and he brought it up in like the first 20 minutes. Hey, Thomas, we were in contact, but you didn't reply anymore. What are we doing here?
Yeah. Are you in or are you out, basically?
Yeah. And then it was just the best ranked school with the best offer that I've found. And besides this decision, it just grew in my head that I want to be here over the past year. And then this year really connected me to the place. Found the community that I wanted to be with here at Ridge Point Country Club. My team's great. Short side story. We left to conference, and the week before, Pierce Johnson decided to put away his clubs for a week because he was just not in a good situation. And with finals and everything coming up and him not traveling, a week off would have been probably the best for him. But he took up his clubs again to practice with us because he didn't want to leave us alone practicing for conference. And then he was on the phone the whole freaking time when we were playing conference, and he was with us more than anybody could be that is not on side. That was just the type of people that I want to be around.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You've done a lot in your first 2 years, but I do want to spend quite a bit of time here just going back and recapping what happened this past week. Yep. Because it was a really, really special week. And let's start with just going into the week. How did you feel? Did you feel like you guys were the favorite? Did you go into the tournament expecting to win?
Expecting to win is a different thing than knowing that you're able to win, because our coach, Coach Hagen, always says that we are the best team in the league. We just got to show it. The thing was that we didn't play a really good season yet. Spring season was not good to us, and we haven't played a single really good tournament. But coach always said that it only takes one tournament to turn a whole season around, and that's what our plan was for that week. We didn't feel like we're on the right track to win this thing, but we knew that we're one of the best teams. We are the best team, and we definitely have a chance if we get ourselves into position.
It's interesting because you go back and look at their spring season, right? And they're not putting up finishes like you like we're accustomed to seeing them put up. So I'll ask this kind of two ways. I guess, first of all, what wasn't clicking in the spring before conference? Kind of what was missing?
I feel like we never had one guy shooting really low. When you look back into fall, there was always one or two guys that kind of led the team to a good finish because they were playing good and kind of pulling the whole team together. In spring, we're just all playing mediocre and had one guy always falling off the back. And that kind of hurt it because we never had a chance to. We never pushed each other by seeing each other's scores. Like usually when you have a 66 in the front, 6 under, the guys in the back want to hunt that guy. And they play to beat that guy. But if you don't have a leading score, it's more of a like, yeah, we got to keep this together. And that's not how you win golf tournaments.
So was that then, did you put that on you to kind of go be the low guy that get chased?
I feel like that's my job on this team, but I was mad at myself for playing this spring season, especially for my good fall season that I had, right? But I wouldn't put it on anybody else. Like, there's no specific person that I could or want to point out that didn't do his job, honestly. I wouldn't do that.
Well, it all came together last week.
Yeah.
And what a week it was, because for those people that don't know the format, the first 3 days are stroke play. And you guys just came out hot out of the gates, had a big lead after day one, and you just were able to maintain it. That first day, did that give you kind of the confidence you needed for the rest of the week?
So individually, talking about that first, I didn't play my best. I just managed it around the greens and scrambled a lot. I made a lot of putts. I chipped it close every time. The only bogey I made was on 18 when I hit it in the water. That was the only bogey. So this really gave me confidence that if I miss a green, I'm still able to make par, and most definitely do. For the team, it was crucial that Jake Lyle shot a 3-under-69 as well, giving us two low scores, I think also low scores of the day, leading the team into the second day, and everybody else managed to play around. We had two 77s that kind of hurt, but we're still in first position by several strokes.
Yeah. So, yeah, talking about the format, it's interesting because you go play three rounds, and the truth is finishing first is not much different than finishing fourth. You're trying to get into match play.
Yeah.
So that said, you guys come out, and, like, after the second round, you're up, like, 17 strokes. Like, I was very concerned, holy crap, like, we're playing too good here with kind of match play still to come.
No, I wouldn't say that because of the format, because you're playing match play the days after, where anything could happen, yeah, right? But leading with that much just probably has an impact on the opponent as well, right? If you should play against somebody who either one stroke play individually or a team that, in average, if you do the math, beat every guy by several strokes, you're going on the first tee thinking you could win, but then you just realize, hey, those guys beat the heck out of us, right? They have no chance. And that's what we tried to do on the third day.
Yeah.
So you wanted to lay the hammer down. Because yeah, that's interesting. Because, again, the third day is like you almost couldn't miss match play.
Yeah.
So it was going to be interesting. Like, how hard was it to really try to convince yourself to get on the gas pedal, because you kind of knew you were in? The wheels would have had to have completely fallen off.
I mean, we had two reasons. I had two reasons. So from once, it was me trying to win individually, right? And then for a second, it was like doing that, making that statement to the other teams that we're so much better than you guys.
All right. You mentioned the individual stuff. After 54 holes, you're tied for first.
Yeah.
And you end up going to sudden death, lose on the third playoff hole. What are the emotions like? Obviously, you know you played fantastic through those 54 holes to tie for first. I know there's a little bit of disappointment there while you're getting ready at the same time to play what you're hoping is 36 holes the next day for a conference championship.
Yeah. So going into the third round, you're like, hey, I want to win this thing. And the match play and the sudden death in the end, it stung, yeah. I mean, you want to win the tournament individually. There's no way around it. But different to other tournaments, this tournament was not. Like, there was no actual individual ranking. I mean, there was, but not in my head. It was like, hey, like, the first 54 holes are just a layup for the fourth day.
Yep.
Where it all comes down to the team. And that was all in my head. Like, I had an Instagram story off saying afterwards, hey, it stings that I didn't win it, that I lost on the third playoff hole. But, I mean, I didn't win individually, but we're going to win tomorrow with the team. That was all I thought about. Usually at every other tournament, I would have been hella mad about me losing the sudden death playoff, right? But for this tournament, I was like, hey, it doesn't matter. We're into match play and we're going to win this thing tomorrow. And I wouldn't think about the loss and sudden death for a single more time.
Well, that's a great mindset to have.
Yeah.
Because it was important to be in a good headspace going into the next day. You go into match play Thursday, semifinal match against Texas State, yeah, able to win that in the morning. I guess before we talk about the finals against ULM, what do you do to kind of collect yourself? You've already played 18 holes in the morning. How do you kind of mentally prepare to play 18 more to try to win a conference championship?
Well, let's give it for the record. He didn't have to go to 18 in the morning. I mean, he took care of that guy a little sooner than that. But
I had 2 holes left. I finished 16, won 4-2, 4 up, 2 holes to go. Yep. Yeah, I mean, coach managed us just well. So we all came in. Our match finished before ULM against Marshall. So we've been in the clubhouse for quite a while. We're able to mentally reset, get some food, take a break, even take a nap if we wanted to.
Did you take a nap?
No, I wasn't able to. So I was thinking.
I would imagine that'd be hard to do.
I was thinking all about the final. But we had enough time to just mentally reset, get some food, take 20 minutes off just to clear your head, and then do a warm-up procedure again and get prepared for the final.
So then the final comes around, and this is probably a question better suited for Coach Hagan, but I want your take on it too, because it talks through the process of setting the lineup and making the matches, because common sense may go, well, you're going to put your, and it turns out you're going to maybe put your top guy last, but some people don't. Sometimes they play that guy first and let him go set the tone. I mean, there's different ways to go about it. So talk about the talk you guys had about setting the lineup the way you set it for the final.
So coaches didn't talk about that to the team at all, but I talked to Coach Hagen, and it was basically he asked me if I want to play against Milan Dibadel, because it's always like matching the strongest with the strongest. And then the other guys, it's more of a decision like, hey, how these guys play, even though if you take 2 guys, they played the same scores, but one is hitting the ball 50 yards further than the other. You don't want to match that up because it would have other disadvantages of hitting first always, the other just like laying back and don't have to make a move first, right? So there are several factors that are just going into those decisions. And setting up the matches, it's always the higher-ranked team or like the team that played better in stroke play has to match the first name. So ULM's putting out a name, Coach Hagen's putting one name on there. Coach Hagen putting one name on ULM, and so on. That breaks down to us being able to match 3 matches the way we like.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. And they did it great because they said it played out exactly like they wanted. They played it out through in their head what they have to do to make it. And they managed to have all 5 matches paired the way they want it. And that just played out pretty good, I would say.
All right, so let's kind of get into this. Because, okay, so you win match 1, it's 3-2. So, all right, 1-0. And I think they win the next 2, right? Everything was 3-2. So, all of a sudden, it's 2-1. You guys get the 4th match, 3-2. How much of this do you know? Because if you're sitting there watching it from a long way out, this match was so close all day long. You can almost see it coming. This is coming down to match 5. How much of that do you want to know, or how much of it do you know before we kind of get down to clearly you're the last guy on the course?
So I was on the course, and because I was the last guy out, like, you see the other guys standing around when they finish that round. They're just standing there and waiting for the last match to be done. And then when I came down to 15, they were the first guys standing around because their matches were over, and they... our team players wanted to support the last guys out. And it was me going 1 down into the final stretch. I knew which matches were won. And when I came down on 15, I knew that I was the only match that was left on the course. And it was 2-2. So my match would have makes the difference.
So you did it on 15-tee?
No, it was on after 15, yeah. I think. After I made a big putt for par to tie the hole into 16.
Yeah, because he had won 14, right? Is that where he went 1 up?
Yeah, yeah. Because I hit a pretty bad drive out of bounds and then not managed to make anything worth mentioning. It was just a bad hole for me.
But the bottom line is you're able to come back and force a playoff.
Yep.
18 holes wasn't enough. So here you are going to a playoff for a second straight day, this time with a team title and a Sun Belt Conference championship on the line. So how much are you thinking about the day before? Did that cross your mind at all? What's kind of going through your mind at that point?
Of course you have some thoughts about, hey, I don't want to lose this again, right? But Coach Hagen walked with me from 16 on. he offered to do it or not, whatever I preferred. And because I knew that I was going to get a pretty bad adrenaline rush coming down the stretch, I was like, hey, please walk with me. Just let me talk you through my shots because that will keep me comfortable and calm. And he said, hey, got to make it 50% of playoffs win, all right? So better win this one.
This is, by the way, this is after birdie in 17 to tie.
Yeah.
Hitting in the water, right, on 18 and still managing to tie to get it to the playoff. So, I mean, this thing is crazy coming down the stretch.
Yeah, so for me, it started on 15. I talked to the team about it. We had a 3.5-hour bus ride back. So we talked through it because I didn't really realize much. I was pretty zoned out in that situation. But the putt on 15 kept me in the match because one down means one hole win to be all square again. And either force a playoff or setting the stage to win another hole to win the match. But two down is two holes to win. It's just so much bigger, especially with only three holes to go.
Right.
So the putt on 15 kept me in the match. Was game changer at that point. And then 16, the adrenaline came. Because that's when I realized, hey, this, you better make this. Hit a pretty good wedge shot to 8-9 feet. That was the first putt in several years where I realized, hey, you're shaking. I was literally shaking. I was standing on that putt and I was thinking about backing up again without any noticeable reason to any other person. I was just like, hey, you're standing there. You're shaking. You can make this putt, but it's going to be one of the best putts in your life. So I pushed it because I didn't want to back up. And that maybe gave him some more hope that he can still, like, lucky punch me through that, push every hole and get the win. But then on 17, hitting it to a foot, him having a putt off the green to make a birdie to tie the hole, just set it everything up from that moment on.
Let's get to the 20th hole because it's a 213. Is that about the right number on this par three?
No.
What the number? That's what they're calling. So, what it shoot?
The number itself was 188 yards. It was playing quite short. Tee box a little bit up, pin all the way in the front. 233 works for like a back pin, back tee box.
Okay.
But 188 was the number. Pin was in the front left. There is a bunker long left behind the pin with a pretty steep slope towards the front edge between bunker and pin. If you imagine that, if you're in the bunker, you're absolutely dead.
Yep.
There's no chance that you manage to make par or birdie, whatever. Just really, really lucky. If you hit the green, it's still a tough two-putt wherever you hit it, because either way, you're blocked out by that slope and you cannot bring it close, or you hit it close, but it's still so freaking fast that you cannot really make it easy. The way to play the hole would have been to go for like front left edge, just miss it there, make a chip putt par, go out of there. It was crazy that it came down to the 20th hole, hole number two again, because that was the first hole that I lost against him.
You doubled it, right?
I doubled it. And I did it the exact way that we did in the final, just the other way around. He hit it on the green, I hit it in the bunker. So I knew how hard that bunker shot was. It was like the no-go zone.
Yes.
Whatever you do, don't hit it there. I hit it in there, first round, didn't get out of the trap, hit it on the green, two-putted for double. He hit it on the green, center, middle green, and two-putted from there. That was the first hole I lost, went one down. It was crazy that it came down to that shot because I was going first. I hit it on the green, and he hit it in the bunker.
You said the play is short left.
Yeah.
But instead, it looks like you just went
straight
stick hunting. Was that just a little extra juice or what?
No, so in the first round, I hit a full 8-iron, and I was like, hey, I'm going to try to go for the green. But then in the second round, I gripped down, and I didn't want to go for it. But adrenaline and the wind just added 12 magical yards to it and managed to land right next to the pin.
All right, so you win it. What's the feeling like after you clinch the championship for your team?
I'm telling you, you don't understand this is like an onion with so many layers. Because before we skip to you win it, like, all right, he hits it in the bunker, and you're right, so you know that's close to dead, and he hits a shot he barely keeps on the green. But then you've got... Is that the world's hardest lag putt? Then you have to stand over?
No. It is not a hard putt. It's not an easy putt.
But given the circumstances?
Given the circumstances, it was pretty tough. But thing was that he already missed his par putt.
Yeah.
So I knew I just had two putts to win. Me, idiot, want to still make the putt. Me going for the cut. I've still kept in my head, like, hey, I just have to two putt it. So I tried to die it in the hole, which didn't look like that on TV. And I was standing over the putt hitting it, and it just kept rolling and rolling and rolling. And the only thing I hear is the whole ULM crew, the whole fans on the left, just going like, ooh. I was standing there and was like, hey, you better make this putt coming back.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear me yelling stop from my living room at the first putt. It just, because I'm with you, it was like it rolled and it rolled. Like, oh, man. Mm. They went a little further than he wanted to.
Yeah, it definitely was. But I've seen the putt roll out and it was fairly straight, little right to left. I mean, it broke left to right. So coming back up the hill, I knew it was pretty straight, little right to left.
Yeah.
So
easier said than done, though.
Easier said than done, but that's probably one of the easiest putts. To be fair, not in the circumstances. I was even shaking more than all the holes before. But I knew, like, just inside right edge and get it to the hole. And there's no chance it'll break right. There's no chance I'm going to leave it short. And it went in, and I was...
see it go down.
I see it go down, and I go, like, oh, my Lord, this is so big. And the whole team coming up. I hear all of them just shouting behind me. And I still don't think that I fully realize how big this was. Like, the whole championship, the whole Sun Belt Conference.
Well, it is a big deal because it's the second Sun Belt Championship in program history. It's just the third conference championship overall in program history, and it takes you to the NCAA tournament. So it's probably good you weren't thinking about all that stuff. You were nervous enough, right?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was just, hey, I don't want to let my people down. 2 weeks prior to the conference championship, Hugo Rønneberg, senior as well, was always walking around with his ring finger up. And he was always like pointing at me, like looking at me and be like, Thomas, putting his ring finger up and be like, hey, Thomas, conference championship ring. I want this. And that was the mentality 2 weeks going into conference. And I don't want to disappoint those guys because they worked just as hard as I did. They won their matches over the days. They've played stroke play the way to set us up for the championship match.
And you celebrate on the course. Did you have another celebration when you got back?
Yes, yes. When we arrived, the guys, Pierce and Anthony, were waiting outside Pack Place where Jack Maxey, Pierce, Anthony, and I are living with the women's golf team. They're all waiting there, just cheering us on, waiting there for us to arrive and... just celebrate, yes.
Great feeling.
Yeah. Oh, my Lord, yes.
Golf team, by the way, the first to win multiple Sun Belt titles since the match play format began in 2016. Of course, winning in 2019, winning again here in 2024. And I'm going to tell you something here because this comes out on Tuesday morning and later this afternoon, we're recording this on Monday, it's going to be announced that Coach Hagan is Sun Belt Conference Coach of the Year.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
I think it's well-earned. He's putting so much work into this, so much thought, so much passion. I don't think anyone on the team knows how much he loves the game of golf. And getting this reward out of this season, out of this year that we had this year, is just pretty huge for him and for us. Proud of our coach.
Thomas, I've got some other news for you. Later on this afternoon, it will also be announced that you... are the Sun Belt Conference Golfer of the Year.
Oh, my God. That is big. That is big.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. That's big, big news. I didn't see that coming. I know I played good this year, but that is big.
So, why would you not see that coming?
I thought about it for a second, but I was like, hey, Hugo Thur, the guy I lost playoff against, he won the individual title. There are multiple guys that had multiple golf of the weeks, and there was just no clear thing to be sure of. I read through on Summer Conference, it's posted, like the last year's guy, and I read through all his like credentials for the year. It was like use amateur runner-up, similar stuff, like big tournament wins and multiple runner-ups and all that. I was like, yeah, that's bigger than my season right now, so I wasn't thinking about it. But
well, you can think about it now.
No, yes, yes, it feels amazing. just knowing like, hey, your season really got recognized.
Well, you deserve it. And I can tell that, yes, you care about the individual stuff, which you should, but I see you light up as well with all the team accomplishments and the fact that you guys were able to do this together and win a Sun Belt championship. And look, coming up on Wednesday, 1 o'clock, it ought to be pretty neat because the team will be at the social with the golf selection show on. I know it's airing on the Golf Channel, but that's got to be a pretty cool moment that you're looking forward to.
Yes. I mean, this is the first time that the team will be in public somewhere at a public event. Usually we play MGA events at Ridgepoint or JCC, but this will be the first time in a while that we'll be out just getting in touch with people, right? So this will be a big moment for us to know where we're traveling to for the regional to be able to qualify for the nationals. And just these news coming out on Wednesday is going to be huge for us with all the support that we can have here in Jonesboro.
Well, congratulations again. An amazing season. Sun Belt Conference champion and Sun Belt Conference golfer of the year.
Thank you,
sir. It's got a pretty good ring to it.
Oh, yes, it does. It really does.
That's Thomas Schmidt joining us here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and the Cavanaugh Auto Group. More to come right after this.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
This is Coach Brian Hodson, and I'm asking you to help our A-State student-athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our student-athletes by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes. Wolves up.
Back on the Second to None podcast presented by the Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Baseball team was at home this weekend hosting Texas State, a series that they really had to win. And they did. They took 2 out of 3. The weather ended up moving the schedule around. We kind of anticipated that when we were sitting here recording last week that it might be a bit different than originally scheduled. And it was a rare Friday doubleheader. I don't really remember too many Friday doubleheaders over the years, but we did play two on Friday. And the best news going into that series was that Will French was back. And I think you and I have talked about it quite a bit, just the impact that he has on the lineup and how much they missed him over the 18 games that he was out with that broken hammock bone. But for him to come back, it was just immediate, his presence being felt in the lineup. It seemed like he was the spark plug once again, the catalyst to that offense, and it just seemed like it felt completely different out there on Friday.
I mean, he gets a base hit on the first pitch of the bottom of the first inning in the first game.
Yeah.
And just
kinda, you'd think he'd take one, but no.
I didn't wait a month to come and look at pitches. He was on base 5 times in the second game.
He was.
Played a good defense. It's amazing, the calming influence. I mean, I think one time in our broadcast referred to him as just sort of a security blanket. It's also like it's crazy to go back and think over the years how many times Coach Raffo's been put in that situation where he's had to go big stretches without his
best
top guy. Yeah. And this is another one of those. And next to the impact of his return was immediate. And then get 2 runs in the 7th to get back on top and win the first game. And then the second game was an odd one because you lose a 7-1 lead.
Yeah.
That's where we insert Jake Henry Williams, because statistically the odds that Texas State are taking the lead in the top of the 9th are through the roof.
You kind of go back in that second game, and they won the first game 5-4, and you mentioned that 2-run single by Kaysen Campbell with 2 outs in the bottom of the 7th. That was the big difference in that game, and it was great to see Blaine Harpinaw come in and throw 2 shutout innings to get the save. But in that second game, it was interesting because it looked like the Red Wolves might win big. It had a 5-run third inning. You're up 7-1 after four, but then Texas State has a 5-run fifth inning. It stayed 7-6 all the way until the ninth inning. And then Texas State is able to score a run. There's first and second, nobody out. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's going to be hard to keep this a tie game going into the bottom of the ninth. And you're right. Jake Henry Williams was the guy. He came in with first and second, nobody out in a tie game and got out of it.
Well, then even in his first batter, right, hits a ball, drops in front of the right fielder. I mean, so really, doesn't it get – I mean, bases loaded, nobody out, right?
Yeah, and able to get out of it. We don't score in the bottom of the ninth, and Jake Henry comes back out, throws a 1-2-3 tenth. We've got bases clear, two outs in the bottom of the 10th, and three straight hits to end it. Jared Toler with the walk-off in the bottom of the 10th. Really, really happy for Jared because this is a guy that has had really an interesting career and played a lot as a freshman and a sophomore. In his sophomore year, he really had a good year and was a big part of the lineup. He had 10 home runs as a sophomore, hit nearly 300 that year, but just hasn't been there the last couple of years. Didn't play much as a junior last year and really hadn't played much as a senior this season until the last seven games. He started the last seven games now, and he's taken advantage of it. The average over 350, and he's just kept a really good attitude.
Yep.
Through the whole process. And for him to get that walk off the other night, I was really happy for him.
I said over on our broadcast, okay, so here's the thing. In fairness, I did not say I wouldn't pitch to Toler here. But I did ask the question, do you just put him on? He lines, you know, ropes one into right field for a hit. You had about a five-second conversation with the Texas State coaches and the umpires because you're getting this little interesting situation. I think it boils down to, and this is one of those things where sitting there watching a game with a guy who played it professionally for a lot of years, they just see everything. And so it led Andy Shatley to dive into the rule book later Friday night because it's first and third, two outs. You know, Toler gets the hit, one hops the wall. You know he's got to touch first, and obviously Burris is going to come in and touch home. But Cason Tollett didn't go to second. And so I think there was a little brief discussion, but apparently, look at the rules, I don't think he has to.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, it didn't seem that, and I wasn't either. That was all Andy spotting that you know, he didn't get all the way there because he just sort of peeled off and went into the celebration. So he's just sitting there almost speechless one time, I think scared to death that they were going to throw the ball to second and the umpire's going to jump up and call Tollett out. And like I said, the Texas State coaching staff did stop and have a really short conversation with the umpires. And then the umpires walked off the field, got in their cart and left. So don't think that as long as the guy touches home and the guy that got the hit touches first, that's all that has to happen.
So we were out there for, what, over 7 hours?
Yeah.
Friday ends up in a doubleheader sweep, and then they come back the next afternoon, and that game goes Texas State's way. They win 10-0 in seven innings.
Weird, because would they score 8 of those runs right in one inning?
Yeah.
9 hits. And here's the thing. They hit probably 2 balls hard. I think they had 2 doubles, 7 singles, and it just – you hear – I heard Coach say this with Cade on his post game, but it's exactly right. Everything in that inning – found grass. Steady parade of hitting balls where somebody wasn't. It is like, what in the world is going on here? They went through the whole lineup. They batted around with 8 hits and an out.
Yeah.
And it was not like they were knocking people around. It's just everything they swung at found its way to grass.
Red Wolves still take 2 out of 3. And the bottom line is they need to just keep winning series from here on out. There's 9 games left in conference play. They did pass Marshall in the standings over the weekend, but still need to pass 3 more.
3 more, yep.
If they're going to get in the top 10 and make the conference tournament, and really the only way to do that is to win all these series, probably need to sweep one of them. And I would think if you win 7 of the final 9, then you probably got a chance at the conference tournament. But that's kind of where they're at right now, but was good to see them get Will French back and to win a series at home this weekend. We'll be back to wrap things up right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours, welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact, spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our program right now. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. How about the football team? Three Red Wolves signing as free agents with NFL teams over the weekend. Leon Jones going to the Bears. Jeff Foreman to the Raiders. And Jalen Cunningham, offensive lineman, going to the Chiefs.
Jeff Foreman, you know, I remember going over and watching Summer Pro Day and thinking, you know, he was doing some stuff in their Pro Day that I'm not surprised he was catching some eyes and getting on some folks' radar. And it's not that it's based on one day, but we know how much those NFL guys look at stuff like that. And he really had a nice Pro Day to cap off a nice career. Glad to see him get a chance to keep going.
Track and field had another good weekend. They were at several different places, three different meets, in fact, over this past weekend. Josh Jones winning the 400-meter hurdles at the Music City Challenge in Nashville. Menachem Chen winning the men's discus. Bella Cassetti winning the women's pole vault at ULM. And Cash Kunkel with a great performance at the Drake Relays. He finished with the third best time in school history in the 3,000-meter steeplechase. And now the track teams get ready for the Sun Belt Conference Championships. No meet this weekend, but starting May 9th, that's a Thursday, through the 11th, they're going to be in Monroe trying to win another Sun Belt Championship.
I can't tell you who's going to win it, but I got a strong hunch who the favorite is.
Yeah, I think that's well established by now. Tennis team went to Rome, Georgia. They fell in the first round of the Sun Belt Conference tournament to Southern Miss, 4-3.
Yeah.
They finished the season with a record of 8-15, but, well, I tell you, that team has shown a ton of improvement. Most wins since 2011 for the tennis program, and I know you and I have talked about it many times, that program certainly heading in the right direction under Sujay Lama.
Yeah, and it's not even just he's a fascinating cat, and we obviously had him in here, but just it's not even just that he's happy or good or satisfied if the tennis product's better. He wants everything about that program better. He wants to have events that people want to come watch, and they did. Like, I tell you with confidence, there've never been bigger crowds at Arkansas State home tennis matches than there were this season. And a lot of that stuff that just kind of he went out and drummed up the interest, honestly. And so I'm excited to see kind of where they go from here.
Women's golf. I want to mention this. They have accepted an invite to the Golf Week National Golf Invitational that's in Maricopa, Arizona, and will be the first time that the program has ever played in the postseason.
That stat surprised me.
Yeah, me too.
But it's well deserved. And this is the type of team that can be very beneficial to let this team go play in some postseason play, because it's a young women's golf team, and they just broke the school scoring record for scoring average.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to really compliment MJ and her staff. It's not easy sometimes to come off having the best player in the history of a program. I don't care what sport you're talking about. It's hard to not have a drop off when you have the best player you've ever had. And they had that with Olivia Schmidt. I don't think there's much debate. And now, so just a year removed from that, to come back and break the program scoring record with a young team, and now this team get to go get some postseason experience, that's really cool. And I put this out on Twitter last week. If you set track aside for a moment and look at everything else, we got 10 teams. Now with women's golf and men's golf, 6 of the 10 this year played in some kind of postseason.
Fantastic.
You know, volleyball, men's basketball, football, bowling, and now both golfs have gotten to postseason play. And that doesn't even count all the stuff track does.
Are we leading in the Bubba's Cup?
No.
Man? I know we were second. Yeah.
I mean,
what about the Bobo's Cup?
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, listen, the Bobo's Cup is going to be coming back this year because it's really, the Bubba's Cup, it's flawed. It just is.
For those who don't know, this is the overall point system that the Sun Belt uses.
And I get it. I mean, it is what it is, but it's the Sun Belt All Sports Trophy, and there are 19 sports the Sun Belt gives a conference championship in. And those 19 sports are the sports you get Bubba's Cup points in. Okay, I get that. But the Bubba's Cup, then they just go by total. This is the problem. Of the 19 sports the Sun Belt gives a championship in, we only compete in 15 of them. So somebody else, I mean, we could technically, in theory, we could get beat out in the Bubba's Cup. Let's say we lost the Bubba's Cup by 3 points to somebody, and they finish last place in all four sports we don't compete in. Well, they'd get a point a sport. You get a point for finishing last. So you mentioned the Bobo's Cup. It's funny because back when I was doing the radio show, that's what I would do every year. I'd take the Bubba's Cup standings and come up with what I thought was a little bit more fair an indicator of who had the best year, and it's not very complicated. I take a school's Bubba's Cup points divided by the number of sports they compete in, and whoever has the highest average wins.
That makes a lot of sense.
And so I'll look forward to diving into that because you just got first place points in men's golf, and then you got the two tracks still coming. But you get into some sports here, like the men's tennis. They had a men's tennis championship. We don't have anything. Beach volleyball, you know, there's nothing. Softball, nothing. And as it turns out, we get nothing for bowling because it's not a Sun Belt sport. So you finish second in the country and, you know, it has no impact on the Bubba's Cup.
Anything else?
I didn't know we were getting down that one. So, no, I think that'll do.
Let's get Tucker in here. I've got a special guest in studio. Tucker, why don't you introduce yourself here, buddy?
Get up on that mic.
Tucker Klein, seventh grader from Westside, has been in studio with us the entire time today as we've been recording this. Mm-hmm. What do you think of all this, buddy?
It's cool.
Tucker, you chose to come here for a job shadow. How come? What made you pick this?
Because I was thinking about doing this because I think it pays a lot of money.
Oh, see, that's what I'm going to tell you, the exact opposite.
We haven't got to that point yet.
Yeah.
You may turn around and go back.
Yeah.
And because I like sports,
okay,
stuff like that.
Because my next question is, do you not like money?
Yeah,
you like money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
He told me he loves baseball. That's your favorite sport?
Yeah.
Favorite team?
Braves.
Oh my God.
See, he's a Cardinal fan.
I don't like them. I've been to a few of their games, but I just don't like them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's it to you? Why would you say that?
Because my dad's been a Cub fan his whole life.
That's weirder than being a Braves fan.
And then, I was a Cub fan growing up, and then I've kind of switched to the Braves.
See, I understand. You are a front runner. If you were my age, so how old your dad?
I think he turned 45 yesterday.
So, see, okay, I get it. His dad came up at a time where if you had cable, you really had, there were two teams you could watch, the Cubs or the Braves. I understand the situation his dad was in. So it's still odd that you'd pick the Braves given his dad's age because about the time the Braves were getting good. So his dad's not a front runner.
No, he's not.
He is. He likes the Braves because they started winning a lot when he started watching.
Well, look, in fairness to Tucker, he's still deciding who his teams are.
Who's your football team?
Eagles.
I at least didn't say the Chiefs.
Now, he would have been a front runner.
Yes, he would.
He's an A-State fan, too. He likes Jalen Reiner. Mm-hmm. What do you think he's going to do this year? Big year?
Mm-hmm.
You going to come out to some football games?
Probably.
Not probably.
Yes.
Yes, there you go.
Well, you answered for him.
Well, I gave him a chance to answer it right the first time, and so he needed nudged across the finish line.
What do you think about all this stuff? Have you enjoyed this?
Yeah.
What did you think of Thomas?
He's cool.
He is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really good golfer, too.
Yeah.
He was pretty surprised when we told him that he was golfer of the year.
Yeah.
I think he was pretty pumped up about
that. Yeah, I do too. That's the second time, right? Isn't one other time we got the Springen Award on somebody?
Yeah, we did.
I can't remember which one. But we did. I can remember doing one
it
other time.
It was Jaquez Cross. So Jaquez Cross was the offensive and special teams player of the week in the same week.
Yeah, and it never happened before.
Had never happened.
That's right.
And
we
had him sitting right where you're sitting, Tucker, and we told him about it. And he was really excited, too.
That's right. Yep. So it is fun to get to do that.
Yeah, thanks to Mark Taylor for setting up that interview and giving us the heads up on that, that we were able to kind of spring that surprise on Thomas. I think that's going to do it for us. We're going to wrap it up now. Tucker, yep. Thanks for joining us today, mm-hmm. buddy. Thanks to Thomas Schmidt, Mark Taylor, for everyone that's been a part of this one. For Brad, I'm Matt. Thanks for listening.